Hello, and welcome to the Comic Book Page Podcast. My name is John Mayo, and I'll be your host. Joining me on this episode to look at the... Which month is this again? March 2007. March 2007. I'll get it right one of these days.
We meant to do it last week.
Yeah. God. Yeah, to look at the March 2007 sales estimates for graphic novels, trade paperbacks, hardcovers, etc., 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 is Chris Marshall of the Collected Comics Library.
Hello, John.
How you doing tonight, Chris?
Doing good.
Cool. Now, a quick note for any new listeners before we get started. The numbers you're about to hear are based on sales from Diamond to retailers in North America's direct market. They do not include the mass market outlets like Border and Amazon. Furthermore, please keep in mind these are just estimates, and actual sales to retailers may be higher, and actual sales to readers may be lower. But hopefully this will give us an idea of what the sales trends are, and we can get some meaningful information out of this. So, Chris, you want to start at the top and figure we look at the top 10 or so of the stuff like usual?
Let's start right at the top, man. And do you want to announce it, or do you want me to?
Because it's
really
you.
No surprise. Number one is 300. Surprise, surprise.
Yeah. It did, 8,700 units or so, bringing the total known sales to 25,600. And keep in mind that Diamond has only been reporting trade sales for only the last few years, and this book's been out for 10 years, maybe?
Oh, I don't think it's that long.
Is it? Yeah. Actually, I think it first shipped in 99.
Yeah, that's...
Tail end of it,
right.
So about 7. So it's probably got a lot higher sales within the direct market, and I would hope this did really well in the mass market the last couple of months.
Yeah, for $30, it's got a great price, too. It's a great introductory price. Not too high, not too low for anybody on the market who wants to learn more about 300 after they've seen the movie.
And I would think most Borders and that kind of stuff, those sorts of bookstores, had a good display when you walk in when the movie was out.
Yeah, they had the one Borders near me had this book, the regular trade, and also the art of 300.
How was that book? We talked about that a few months ago. Did it look
good? I just kind of scanned through it. It was pretty good. It had, the full page scans of the art, and then the breakdown of, they had the blue screen and had all the actors. I mean, the whole movie was done on blue screen, really.
Yeah.
So, but then they had sketches from the actual comic book too, and it kind of wrapped everything up together. So, which is
pretty cool. I may have to check that out. I really want to get the DVD 300 just because, like you said, it was all done with the blue screen type technology, and I'm really curious how that kind of a virtual movie making, the nuts and bolts of that. But.
Well, if you'd like something along those lines, pick up the Sin City DVD.
I should. I never got into Sin City.
Well, as far as the technical aspect.
That's true.
As far as making the movie, yeah.
And of course, it's got a reputation for having been a very brilliant translation from comic book to film. So I should probably check that out.
Yeah. Hopefully they'll make a sequel to it.
I thought they were working on one.
Yeah, I mean, they're trying to get Jessica Alba, aren't they? Or is that out the window now?
Yeah, I thought it was either her or Angelina Jolie, but I'm not
Angelina
sure.
Jolie, that might be the one. Yeah.
But, like I said, I've never really followed the Sin City stuff. It's just not something I was interested in. But, hey, if it makes good movies and it gets people reading comics, I think that's a good thing.
Yes, absolutely.
Because I certainly think they can transition from Frank Miller into, say, the Batman stuff, or, maybe the Vertigo stuff. Or, I mean, there's so many things that a good retailer can transition readers from, one thing to another on that. Mm. Now, that was $30. The next item, only $7.95, and that's Naruto Volume 13. This did, 6,300 or so units, which is right around what the previous volume of that did. Overall, the series of trades seems to have been trending up, but seems to have kind of leveled off with this. And, again, this is one that's backed up by an animated series on Cartoon Network. So, again, I think this is something that's probably doing pretty well in the mass market outlets, and certainly it's doing very well, in the direct market. Do you have any real familiarity with this series?
Unfortunately, I have not. I've not read it. I've not seen the TV show.
I figured, you know, with your son Patrick, you might have gotten hooked on this, but...
No, not really.
Does he not watch much in the way of cartoons or much in the way of thing? Actually, is he into manga?
No, he's not. Okay. No, he's all into sports right now.
That's cool, too.
That is all he is into.
Of course, that means he's not a comic geek. I'm sorry. No.
He's not a comic geek, but I, you know, he did go to Free Comic Book Day with me.
Cool.
And he did get his Hulk Iron Man book, and he's happy about that. So
he had fun?
He had fun. My daughter got the Mickey Mouse book, so she had fun, too.
Good deal. Good deal. Now, how old's your daughter?
She's 4.5.
4.5. Okay, so she's still a little ways before getting to where I should be selling her on the Spider-Girl series, I guess.
Right. But she loves the Disney stuff. And
that's
you know
cool.
what? It's funny because watching the Disney movies, the classic Cinderella movies and everything, I've got a newfound respect for that era of filmmaking and, you know, the artists that went in. I mean, and now that they have, speaking of 300 in Sin City, they've got all the making of Cinderella and Peter Pan on the second disc they package with.
Really?
Which is, that's fascinating to watch. Oh, yeah.
That's interesting. Because you're right, that was a Hallmark era for the Disney studios.
Oh, wonderful.
They were doing just some brilliant 2D animation, and in a day and age where, I mean, it all obviously had to be done by hand. And you're right, some of it's just breathtaking.
Oh, it's great. And, you know, of course there's the Pixar stuff, but if you want to get more into CGI and digital animation, but I'm kind of more fond of the original animation from the 1940s and 50s.
My favorite Disney thing, and again, this is a tangent, but that's okay. We've got time. Tarzan. I thought they did really good 2D stuff, yet it had kind of that, what do they call it, the deep canvas, where they took advantage of the computer power and stuff, and you kind of dive into the scene in a way you just really couldn't do prior.
Right.
So, and... Oh, I know they do some of these things as comic book type properties or whatever from time to time with some of the digest size type things in the supermarkets or whatnot. It just seems like the Disney properties are something that could really be used as an on-ramp for new and younger readers. So I'd like to see more of that. We should talk to J.C. Vaughn about this in San Diego.
Absolutely. You know, I just emailed JC a few days ago, so I am in definite contact with JC talking about the EC archives.
Cool.
So,
yeah, he's a good guy. I like him.
He is. He's great.
Shall we move on to the next one?
Let's move on.
That would be Ex Machina number 5, Smoke, the trade paperback, and it did about 6,100 units. The previous volume, volume 4, only did about 5,600 units. This is an increase of about 500, or a little under 9%, about 8.91%. And this series of trades really seems to bounce around in sales. Previous two volumes both did around that 5,600 units, but volume 2 did around 6,000, but volume 1 only did about 4,200. Now, none of these are bad numbers for trades, but that kind of bouncing around from volume to volume implies to me that the readers are maybe, you know, kind of picking and choosing which volumes they get and are not, you know, diehard loyal fans or whatever of the series, potentially.
This is by Brian K. Vaughan.
Yeah.
Is this series coming out on time, as far as you know?
Ooh, that is an excellent question. And let me see if I
wonder if that has anything to do with it.
Well, the trades I should have in here somewhere. Volume 3 of, I'm not sure when the first volume came out. Volume 2 came out in September of 05. Volume 3 of the trade in April of 06. Volume 4 in November of 06.
That's okay. Every 6 months, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, 6 months.
That's okay.
That's not too bad. But it doesn't seem to have a clear direction as to where it's going. Mm-hmm. By and large, I'm going to say 5,800-ish is kind of where it's hovering, but not very close to that from month to month. And it's a good series. Are you reading this one?
I am not. No, I'm not. But I do like Brian K. Vaughan, though. I do like his stuff.
It's good stuff. Personally, I think it started a little stronger than it's going right now. But it's got a nice mix of kind of the politics, a more real-world look at superheroes without being kind of the grim, gritty, too realistic sort of a thing. And again, the having the lead character, Mitchell 100 be the mayor of New York and stuff, was a very clever move in terms of setting it apart from everything else on the comic book stands. You know, it makes it just inherently unique that way, which is cool. Alright, let's move on to the next one, which is Spider-Man Birth of Venom. It did about 5,300 units. Now, I'm not sure really what, if anything, in terms of other Spider-Man volumes I should be comparing this against. So I don't really have a here's how it did versus the previous thing, because they're not really numbering these, you know how it is. But given the recent Back in Black storylines in the Spider-Man titles, you know, I'm not surprised that a Spider-Man book did so well, particularly one going on about the birth of Venom and the origin and stuff of the black costume. I see this as a really good example of kind of cross-promotion, where the trade benefits from promoting the Back in Black storyline, and, you know, the Back in Black storyline kind of promotes this and benefits from it, too. It's a really good synergy there, and I'd like to see more of that.
Well, this is one of those trades that it seems like Marvel's taken a lesson from DC. Before Superman Returns came out, DC put out a book called Superman vs. Lex Luthor, which showcased all their greatest battles from their first meeting back in the Golden Age up until today. And also, when Batman Begins came out, they had a trade called Batman versus Scarecrow, or Scarecrow Tales, I think it was. And they also brought out one Batman, the Ra's al Ghul, and his battles with Batman and everything. So this is kind of one of those books they put out prior to the movie to generate interest. And yeah, but also it also helps that that Marvel and those guys throw Peter back into his black costume. That definitely helps out sales too.
Oh yeah, and I'm sure they put him in the black costume to leverage the movie fans and stuff like that. I mean, they'd be foolish not to.
And this book collects Secret Wars number 8, where of course he's on Battle World and Peter gets the black costume, the symbiote, for the first time. But don't be mistaken, because they only published the last 3 pages or 3 panels of Secret Wars number 8, not the whole issue.
That makes sense.
When he gets it. So
now let's see. Secret Wars, that was when they took a year-long storyline and a self-contained bubble of continuity and had the characters change when they came back, essentially a year later from their standpoint. That sounds vaguely familiar. No, actually, that was kind of... It was a cool storyline, but I swear those couple of pages in Secret Wars just seemed like a bit of a non sequitur. It's like, oh yeah, we got to put him in the black costume. Better do something. But yeah, the rest of the storyline pays off.
I think Secret Wars is one of those must-read Marvel books.
I would agree with that, actually.
And it's funny, because if I were to ask you straight up which character was not on Battleworld, who would you say? Who was not on Battleworld?
I know one of the fantastic...
Major DC heroes was not on Battleworld.
Marvel, you mean. There was... Tony Stark was not.
No, he was not, but there was an Iron Man.
There was an Iron Man. It was Jim Rhodes. Yeah. One of the Fantastic Four was not. I think it was the Invisible Woman, but I could be wrong.
I think you're right. Someone
and
else.
And Kitty Pryde was not.
No. Think more hero from the Silver Age.
Hero from the Silver Age.
Come on.
Thor, I don't think, was.
Thor was.
Gosh, it's been 25 years since I read it. This is the first... major thing I read of Marvel. It's what got me into Marvel. Spider-Man was there, Captain America was there, we talked about the Fantastic Four, most of the Avengers were there, most of the a decent amount of X-Men were there. We talked about Iron Man. I'm trying to think who else would be and I'm drawing a blank. This is sad.
Come on, classic DC Silver Age. One of the first.
DC.
Marvel. I'm sorry.
Hulk was there.
Hulk was there. Who else? He's missing.
I'm trying to think if Ant-Man was there.
I don't think earlier than Ant-Man.
Earlier than. Well, Submariner wasn't there. But
no, not Submariner.
Okay, help me out here. What's the obvious thing I'm missing? What's the elephant in the room here?
Blind.
A Daredevil.
Daredevil was not in Secret Wars.
He wouldn't have really fit.
No.
I'm trying to think what he was doing at that time.
Isn't that odd, though, that all the classic characters were on Secret Wars but Daredevil?
Yeah. Well, and again...
And I don't know why that is, but he just, you know... Every time I read that, I'm like, oh, you know, what would Daredevil do in this situation?
He could have really been an interesting, I'll say, mediator between some of the different groups, but
he would have gone back and forth, I think.
Yeah,
kind of like how, you know, Doom played both sides of the coin a little bit.
Well, and the X-Men were kind of a third camp to a degree.
They were the third camp, yeah.
But yeah, you're right. It's something that definitely everybody, if they're into Marvel, should read. Mm-hmm. And you're right, that is interesting how they got kind of the core founding aspects of the Marvel Universe there, but not Daredevil.
But not Daredevil.
It was a war, not litigation. I mean, come
on. Okay, let's move on. We spent way too much time on that one.
No, that's okay. let's see. New Avengers Volume 4, the collective, not the just collective, trade paperback. That one did about 5,100 units compared to the 6,000 for Volume 3. It's down about 900, which is about 15%. And this series started pretty good with Volume 1 moving about 5,800 units. Volume 2 did a lot better at 8,400 units. But sales have kind of dropped off since then. Volume 3 only did about 6,000. 4 only about 5,100. And this doesn't really reflect the sales trends of the component issues. I mean, well, it's possible that over time the sales of the trades are going to reflect how the monthly did better just because, you know, people are waiting for the trade, that kind of a thing. You know, I'm not really seeing that in the way the trades are charting compared to the monthlies right now. What do you make of that? Do you think too many people are waiting? Do you think the trades aren't going to do as well? Do you think maybe the hardbacks, because they're doing hardbacks of these, aren't they?
They are doing hardbacks of these. I think it's interesting. I mean, I heard on the Around Comics, they were talking how you can wait for the trade, right? So you mm-hmm. miss the monthly series. Now people seem to be not waiting for the trade, but they're waiting for the premier hardcover or the omnibus or the oversized special edition.
Oh yeah, I've been saying this was a risk for them, if not a reality for publishers mm-hmm. for a while now.
Right.
You get people to where it used to be in back in the day, either you got the comic or you didn't. And if you wanted it, you got it. Mm-hmm. Then it got to where it's like, well, okay, maybe I'll wait for the back issue or get it in back issue, whatever. But then the trade started coming out reliably. So it's like, well, I'll wait for the trade. But if you want the trade, you better get it when it comes out. Mm-hmm. Now, well, the trade's always going to be on the shelf. There's a huge, you know, market for that. So you don't need to get it today. You can get it 6 months from now, a year from now, 2 years from now, whatever. But you're right. They've gotten it to where, like you said, you've got the premier hardcovers, the regular hardcovers, the omnibuses, they've got the digests.
The absolutes.
Stuff.
Right, they got everything.
The absolutes, exactly. I mean, there's so many different ways you could package a series that they've gotten it to where it's not a decision for a comic reader not to get the comic or maybe to wait for the trade or not even get the trade. It's almost habit forming by the number of times you can make that kind of decision. You know, I gotta think that that's coming into play here a little. I also certainly have to think that trade sales are a long-term thing versus the kind of in and out during the month like a monthly comic is. So I certainly don't expect the bulk of the trade sales to be in the first month or whatever. Mm-hmm. But again, when I'm not seeing the trades over time kind of map to the same basic chart that the monthlies did, you know, I gotta wonder how come. You know, what's going on there? You know, it could be that there's some kind of key difference between the kinds of people that buy monthlies, the kinds of people that buy trades, and why they buy, you know, each. So, but interesting. Mm-hmm. Should move on to the next one?
Let's move on. Star Wars Boba Fett Volume 1, Man on a Mission. Man with a Mission, pardon me.
Yeah, let's see. This one did 4,900 units, not bad. This also came out near the end of the month. So, it being Star Wars, we may see a little more reorder activity on this in the future and stuff. Now, this... What does this reprint? Is this,
Ooh, you're catching me off guard.
I'll be honest. Like I've said before, the only real Star Wars stuff I'm keeping track of these days is Knights of the Old Republic, which I'm really enjoying. But I gotta kinda, you know, pick and choose my Star Wars stuff carefully, because there's so much of it.
Well, that's a good series to keep.
Oh, it's excellent. I'm really, really having a lot of fun with that. And just as a side note on that, if you haven't found it already for Knights of the Old Republic, go to, I think it's farawaypress.com, and John Jackson Miller, the writer of it, who also, of course, is one of the big number crunchers of comics in the industry, he's got some great kind of behind-the-scenes material on his website. Kind of stories about how they put together the story, what he thought worked, what he thought didn't, that sort of stuff for each issue, which I think is kind of a DVD extra-ish sort of a thing. It's kind of a cool touch. So. Now, according to my notes, this Man with Mission is, about 104 pages of never-collected Boba Fett stories.
It collects, I'll tell you what it collects, issues 7 and 28 of Star Wars Empire, and the Boba Fett Overkill and Agent of Doom one-shots.
Okay, cool. Some of the one-shots and stuff. And, of course, Boba Fett's such a popular character from the Star Wars stuff.
Oh, he sells himself, exactly.
Yeah. Not a surprise at all.
No.
Okay. Next up from Viz at the low price of $7.99... Death Note Volume 10 trade paperback, which did, 4,700 units. Volume 9 only did about 4,000, so this is up about 700, which is about 17 or 18%. And this series is really picking up some steam. Sales are going up for each new volume, and I suspect if we had more visibility into trade sales through Diamond, you know, beyond just the top 100, we'd probably see some pretty good reorder activity on the earlier volumes. But that's just, you know, speculation on my part. Seems to be a lot of good buzz on Death Note, from what I'm hearing. People are liking it. Not one that I'm reading. And you're not too big on manga either, so I'm suspecting you're not reading this.
No, I'm not.
And I'm sure we talk about this every time it hits the top 100 or top 10, you know. It's not like I'm going to remember this. But, you know, I really like how this one is trending. Because, like I said, it just seems to keep going up and up. And, you know, the first one did, I'm going to say, about 1,200-ish. The next two I don't think I have complete information on, again, because of the limitations of what Diamond reports. But really after that, it does, you know, about 2,200, then about 2,400, then about, you know, 2,900 for the next two, and then with volume 8 it's up to about, you know, 37 or so, and then, you know, about 4,000 with volume 9 and stuff. It's, you know, it's picking up steam, and I think that's great. Again, manga seems to do well from what I hear in the bookstores and stuff. I'm sure it's seeing a similar sort of trend there. And I would think that in this kind of a case that there's some, I don't say cross promotion, but definite benefit of, you know, people get hooked on it at a bookstore or whatever, so they can pick it up at a comic store later, or if on it at the comic store, they can keep up with it in the bookstore. So that's kind of, you know, the accessibility of the series, I think, is a good thing. But back to comics I'm actually familiar with. Next up in slot number 8 is Ultimate Fantastic Four, Volume 7, God War, the trade paperback, which did about 4,500 units. Now, that's down about 1,300 units, or about 22% from Volume 6, which did about 5,800 units. Now, this one collected, Volumes 33 through 38 of Ultimate Fantastic Four. And I'm trying to remember which storyline that was. That was the one with the aliens that came and with the Dreamcatcher, yeah. Did you read the storyline?
No, I did not. I don't pick up any of the Ultimate storyline stuff. I know.
I really like the Ultimate Fantastic Four's characters. This storyline did not really work for me. I'm not personally surprised it went down from how the previous ones did. I don't think this was a high point for the series. But if you're going to read Ultimate stuff, pick Spider-Man.
Yeah.
It's definitely the best of the bunch. Although Kirkman's doing some good stuff on Ultimate X-Men too. So, out of the three, though, I think this is I think FF is kind of the weakest of the three, or at least the most uneven. When it does well, it does really well. When it doesn't, it's just kind of mediocre. But I mean, not everything can be the best. Okay, why don't you take this next one? Because I'm not sure I can pronounce it. That's mean of me, isn't
Bafford
it?
Bafford and Gray Mouser?
Yeah, it sounds right.
Mouser?
Let's see, yeah. Bafford? They just don't put enough vowels in there for me.
I know, they don't.
Let's see, trade paperback, did about 4,300 units. Tell me you know something about this one.
This series is a classic series, actually, that was started by a guy, you know, it's one of those, this is one of those classic stories in like a, oh gosh, the homework that I did, I try to prepare for this.
I'm glad one of us did, thanks, because I didn't.
it's a classic storyline.
Okay.
And it has been, adapted throughout the years, and keeps being updated and reprinted in different forms and everything. That's all I can say. I think it's in the realms of like a Dungeons and Dragons type thing.
Now this version was done by Chaykin and Mike Mignola did the art, right?
Right.
Okay, so that's a pretty good team right there, even for an adaptation.
But this is a sword and sorcery type book, though.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Would not have genres. Yeah, the solicitation kind of. Yeah. I really ought to get out to the comic store more, shouldn't I?
Mm-hmm.
That's one of the downsides from getting my stuff mail order through DCBS, is this didn't really hit my radar when it was solicited, and obviously I never saw it on the shelf. Cool. Sounds...
Okay, here's some trivia for you. In 1972, Bafford and Mouser began their comics career appearing in Wonder Woman 202 alongside their title character and Catwoman in a story scripted by Samuel Delaney. In 1973, DC Comics began an ongoing series, Sword and Sorcery, featuring the duo. The title was written by Denny O'Neill and featured art by Chaykin, Simonson, and Starlin, of all people.
Interesting.
Yes.
So it was a backup feature in Wonder Woman?
Apparently.
That's... Huh.
And thanks to Wikipedia.
You search faster than I do.
Yes.
My hat is off to you. Now, that's interesting.
But I know this has gotten a lot of critical acclaim, though.
Yeah, I've been hearing good things about it, but not specific, and obviously I haven't paid attention. No, that's cool. It's interesting. We could use some good sword and sorcery stuff. There's not enough of that genre these days out there, I think.
No, and you'd think you'd expect more in the wake of Lord of the Rings. But there really hasn't been.
You know, you're right. That seems like it would have really had a resurgence of that sort of, you know, that genre, that kind of storytelling, particularly in comic books, because it really lends itself to the artistic depiction and stuff, because it's got so many great potential visuals. I'm surprised we haven't seen an upturn in that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, maybe when they do The Hobbit.
Yeah, maybe.
Okay, maybe not. Okay, rounding out the top 10, we've got Warcraft Volume 3 from Tokyo Pop. This is a graphic novel that did, let's say, 4,100 units. Now, I don't have information on how the second one did at my fingertips, but the first one did about 3,800. This is up about 300 from where that first one did, which is about 7-8% gain. Question is why? No, actually, I take it back. I do have Volume 2 information here. Volume 2 did about 3,600 units, pardon me, 3,600, which is down about 200 from that first one, but that third one more than makes up for it, jumping back up to that 4,100 or so. Now, this is based on, let's see, it's the final volume in the Warcraft manga trilogy. And let's see, Warcraft is that's not the online game, is it?
World of Warcraft? World no, of Warcraft? I don't believe it is. No.
Yeah, I'm not sure. Again, I will plead ignorance. Sales aren't too bad though. 4,100. That's healthy sales. Nice selection of publishers in the top 10 this month. We've got We've got Tokyo Pop, Dark Horse, Marvel, Viz, DC. You know, Marvel did well. Dark Horse, of course, did pretty well. Actually, I would almost say, based on where they're ranked and stuff, Dark Horse did pretty well in the top 10.
Mm-hmm.
Particularly again with 300 skewing them pretty high. But definitely a good showing. Not as lopsided as the top 10 for the comics were this month.
Oh, was that lopsided?
Oh, yeah. 8 of them were Marvel.
Oh, jeez.
I think it was 8 Marvel, 1 DC, and the other was Dark Horse.
Brother.
So, I mean, totally lopsided. Shall we go down, touch on the highlights, a couple other things?
Let's do the highlights, yeah.
Okay, what I noticed down at slots 11 and 13 were two showcases. We had second volume of House of Mystery, which did about 4,000 units, and then Hawkman, the first volume of that, which did about 3,800 units. Those seem pretty solid numbers for showcases, I think.
Yeah, I think a book, especially House of Mystery, is, I think that whole horror genre from the 50s and 60s is getting a push from not only DC, of course, but also from Marvel, publishing their Marvel Masterworks Tales of Suspense and Tales to Astonish books, and also the resurgence in the DC Archive line as well. I think all three companies are kind of helping each other push these classic stories.
I would agree. There definitely seems to be some synergy across the companies there, mm-hmm. which is great.
And that is good. I applaud them all for that, because they should be out there and should be read.
Oh, and again, the EC stuff is classic. A lot of these House of Mystery stories were just, you know, some really great stuff. So it's nice to see, you know, the other genres being represented, and particularly some of the really best material of it getting out there. So now, between those two was the Crisis on Multiple Earth Team-Ups Volume 2.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, I'm a big fan of the classic, you know, parallel universe stuff, so that's kind of cool. That mm-hmm. did about 3,800. Down at rank 21 was Empowered, the trade paperback from Dark Horse. Did about 3,200 units. This one I thought was pretty interesting. This is actually something I went and, because of how well it did, I picked up while I was out at the stores on Free Comic Book Day. I haven't had time to read it yet. But this is one of the few original content trades that has come out lately. And it is, I'm going to say, how many pages is this? A couple hundred. And I think it's a series of short stories and things like that. But, you know, we're just not seeing that much in terms of original content in the collected editions and stuff these days. So I was glad to see this one did well. And I believe in the latest previews they've solicited for a second volume. So that, I think, is a really good sign, too. Because, again, for my money, the industry is shifting slowly but surely towards a reliance more on the trades than on the monthlies. So seeing some original stuff, always a good sign.
Hmm.
Did you pick this one up or not familiar?
I did not. No, I'm not familiar with it, but I think I will. It's very interesting.
It looks like pure cheesecake and stuff of, you know, yeah. Scantily clad, powered female, you know. It's like, okay, I can go with that.
Adam Warren. I'm not familiar with his work either.
He did some stuff on Gen 13 bootleg, maybe. You'd recognize his style. He's got a very distinctive, okay. I don't want to say cartoony style.
Iron Man Hypervelocity he did.
Yeah. Okay. He's been around. He's a good solid artist.
Okay.
Let's see. The next one I had was down at 27, which was Secret Six, 6 Degrees of Devastation. The trade paperback did about 2,800 units. These are not exactly what I would consider great opening numbers for the Secret Six trade. Given that the miniseries launched at about 57,400 units and ended at about 35,500 units, I can't say I'm incredibly surprised by the lackluster opening sales. But, you know, it just, between that kind of a drop during the miniseries, these kinds of low opening numbers, you know, I think the Secret Six, as we see them these days, is going to be stuck to guest appearances over in Birds of Prey and other places. And it may be a little while before we see them get, you know, their own series again.
I think what may have hurt this book is the title, because the first trade paperback was, of course, Villains United. And yeah. Then it goes into Secret Six, and you'd have to know who the Secret Six are. You know, and it does. I reviewed this trade a few weeks back when it came out, and I like the series. I really like the whole concept of Catman leading a team, and it's kind of like DC's version of Thunderbolts in a way.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, with the mix-up and everything, and I thought they did a great origin or pseudo-origin story to the Mad Hatter, and it was Mad Hatter's origin done unto himself kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the writer didn't do it. It was more or less his own interpretation.
Right.
I mean, my God, there's room for a sequel for sure.
Oh, totally. This is your comparison to the Thunderbolts, I think, is a great one. There's a lot they could do with this concept.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I just hope that we see more of it. But you know, with sales like this, it doesn't seem like that's a slam dunk.
Hey, I've got a question. Did you read this trade?
I read the comics. I didn't read it in trade, but in the monthly format. So, yes.
Okay, here we go with this again. Does this take place during 52 or 1 year later?
I thought it took place 1 year later. But I can't swear to that.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure it would have been during the 1 year later time frame.
Okay.
Well, it would have been after... Infinite Crisis and everything.
No, a little bit after Infinite Crisis, yeah, for sure.
So everything other than 52 takes place 1 year later, pretty much.
It does. Okay.
Aside from the first, there's an issue or two of Blue Beetle that kind of bridges the gap, but other than that, I'm pretty sure almost by definition everything else is.
Maybe you're right. Maybe because Checkmate was in this book. Now that I'm remembering.
Yeah, and Checkmate was clearly 1 year later.
Okay.
They could have done a better job kind of branding that, making that known, but, you know. Why don't you take 33 and 36?
Yeah, the Marvel Masterworks Doctor Strange Volume 3 at number 33, and number 36, Marvel Masterworks Golden Age USA Comics Volume 1.
They both did about 2,400 units. That's not too bad for Masterwork.
Hmm.
Now, in that Golden Age USA Comics, what exactly did that have in there?
USA Comics 1 through 4.
Oh, okay, that was a little before my time.
Yeah. That had... Hold on a second. You know, I have it, but I haven't even looked at it yet.
Let's see. According to the solicitation blurb, it's got the Defender, Major Liberty, Rockman, Rusty, the original Avenger... Origins of the Wizard, Jack Frost, Vagabond. Wizard and Jack Frost I'm familiar with. I'm familiar with the Vagabond, but probably not that one. And Captain Terror, in fact.
A bunch of nobodies, really. I mean, it's interesting they brought this book out to begin with.
You know, I'm surprised they didn't come out with it while the new Invaders series was going on.
Yeah.
Because I think that would have kind of tied in a little bit better or whatever. Interesting.
Personally, I don't think the timely Golden Age is really good. But I like the old National Comics, DC Comics, though.
Right.
And I love, and of course, the Fawcett stuff you can't beat.
Oh, yeah.
but as far as the timely goes, oh man, it was just not good. You know, even with very early Jack Kirby, very, very early Stan Lee. You
know, well, and
I didn't find the characters fascinating. I don't find the storylines that interesting.
Yeah. No,
even Captain America, I think, was, you know.
Well, part of it, it was some of that stuff in the Golden Age, is it's dated. And either you can get into that mindset or you can't, or sometimes what they had from that time period works or doesn't today. You know, it's
yeah.
Some of it can be real hit or miss.
Right. I mean, it's just the art. I just get lost.
But yeah.
Some art and some storytelling is great. The old pulps are great, you know. But I cannot get into the timely comic stuff.
Well, also some of it with the art there is not only for me the style, but the storytelling. Because the style, Jack Kirby, brilliant artist. I don't like his style personally. I respect it. But it's big, it's blocky. Now, he does the style perfectly, but it doesn't always play right for me. Now, I can't imagine the original FF being done by any other artist or anything like that, nor am I suggesting it should have been. But so you've got the style aspect, which for me is sometimes a barrier, but you also again have the storytelling, and some of the stuff from back in the Golden Age and Silver Age, it was almost a slideshow mentality for how they told the story. Certainly I felt this way more with some of the earlier Superman stuff, where it's like, you know, okay, they show a picture, set the scene, show a picture, he's going to the place, show a picture, he's solving the crime, show a picture, he's doing this, and you could tell an entire story in one page, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And there's nothing wrong with that approach or whatever, it's just so different from where we can spend an entire issue of characters driving from point A to point B, you know, these days, and just talking in a car almost, you know, it's like...
Yeah.
It's very different.
I guess I just thought it was an interesting choice when they announced it. I mean, you know, you'd figure they'd finish up the run of Captain America, Submariner, or the original Human Torch before they do that, or even do the Young Allies.
Yeah.
Which were, you know, Bucky and everybody back then. You know, get more of the mainstream characters before you move on to... a title like USA Comics.
But it's funny, because as obscure as these characters are for USA Comics, it did just about the same as Doctor Strange.
Yeah.
And that really surprises me, because Doctor Strange, I mean, come on, talk about a classic Marvel character.
Oh, sure.
And one that, you know, maybe doesn't get the respect these days he deserves, but I mean, you know, and that Doctor Strange stuff, written by Roy Thomas, I mean, come on, top-notch writer there. Penciled by people like Gene Colan, Tom Palmer, Dan Atkins and stuff. I mean, these are some good artists, too. So for it to have kind of that juxtaposition in a known quantity of characters and creators and stuff, yet no real difference in sales, I'm surprised by that. You know,
And the Golden Age is at a $5 price more.
Yeah, you're right. I hadn't even noticed that.
$5 more.
It's $59.99, whereas the Doctor Strange is $54.99.
Mm-hmm.
What do you attribute that price difference to?
No, Marvel came out and they announced that a while ago, that all the Golden Age material, because it takes
a little bit more
and more restoration and everything, yeah.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense. And that's about where my recording of the discussion with Chris seemed to have ended. I'm not entirely sure why. Technical glitch of some sort, although I've got a couple of ideas that I need to look into. We went on, talked for probably another 15 or 20 minutes on a couple of the other items on the list and the market share, both on the trades and comparing that to the comics this month. I've posted the Excel file for this month on my website. I'll put a link in the show notes. And if you haven't been checking out Chris's Collected Comics Library podcast, you really ought to be. I mean, I'm sure everyone listening to my podcast is already listening to Chris's, and if not, like I said, they should be. One of his more recent episodes, the one from this week after Free Comic Book Day, he took a look at what the offerings were for the free comics and had a number of really great suggestions on trades that would be good things to pick up if you enjoyed those comics. Once again, my name is John Mayo, I've been your host, and this is the Comic Book Page Podcast. If you have any comments or questions, I can be reached at podcast@comicbookpage.com. Thanks for listening.